Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Granta Raj, Shima Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki. Go pray. Okay, so tonight we'll go from verses.
Text 44.
That was yesterday. Today we're starting chapter 52. And we're going from verses 1 to 22. What is chapter 22 called? Sorry? Chapter 52?
Rukmini's message to a Christian.
Yeah. Rukmini?
Guru, yesterday I did not know there's class.
But we did the class.
Oh, okay.
I always do the class, I never stop. So. Verse 1 to 22, and chapter 52 is called
Rukmini's message to Lord Krishna.
Yeah, Rukmini's message to Lord Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami said, "My dear King, thus graced by Lord Krishna, Muchakunda circumambulated him and bowed down to him. Then Muchakunda, the beloved descendant of Ikshvaku, exited through the mouth of the cave. Seeing that the size of all the human beings, animals, trees and plants was severely reduced, and thus realizing that the age of Kali was at hand, Muchakunda left for the north." Would have a bundle pool?
There are several significant words in this verse. The standard Sanskrit dictionary gives the following English meanings for the word sallapa: little, small, low, violent, poor, indigent, wicked, malicious, abandoned, hard, pain, distrust. These are the symptoms of the age of Kali, and all these qualities are said here to apply to men, animals, plants and trees in this age. We who are enamored of ourselves and our environment can perhaps imagine the superior beauty and living conditions available for people in commerce areas. The last line of this text, Jagama Isam Uta, even toward the north, can be understood as follows. By traveling north in India, one comes to the world's highest mountain, the Himalayan range. There one can still find many beautiful peaks and valleys, where there are quiet hermitages suitable for austerity and meditation. Thus in Vedic culture, going to the north indicates renouncing the comforts of ordinary society and going to the Himalayan mountains to practice serious austerities for spiritual advancement.
Any points there? Yeah, they also travel to the north. Any other points?
It's showing that Muchakunda is really renounced and focused on Krishna now, no longer on being a king or being going back to his old life.
Yeah. Good.
Or a fire.
Yeah. Anything else? What is the age?
It's 50.
How old are you now?
41.
Any other points?
Is it necessary to go to like forests, like they say, go to Himalayas for? It's not necessary.
Why not?
Detachment can be.
You don't like the Himalayas?
I'm saying detachment.
Yeah, that's the basic point. You have to become detached. The point is, are you detached? Any other point?
When Muchakunda saw that it was Kali Yuga, he realized that it's very, very hard to be renounced in. That's why it's in Himalayas, where it's quiet, where it can be austere. It's easier to be austere in the quiet areas.
Any other point?
Instead of going to the north, we all have come to the down under here.
Yeah. Anything else? So, when Muchukunda walked out of the cave, he saw that everything had reduced in size. So, he himself was very tall. He was from the previous yuga. I've heard that in the Satya Yuga that people may have been something like 18 foot tall, which is very tall. I mean, it's basically nearly up to the roof. Very, very tall. So he was like that. So when he came out, he saw that everyone was short. Mm-hmm. Everyone was, all the trees were shorter, the people are shorter. In Kali Yuga, everything loses vitality day by day. You see the people, and you see it's very rapid, the degradation we're seeing before our eyes. You see each generation at the moment. You know, like I was saying, I don't know, in this class or in the temple, but you know, you look at Jagannath Ballabha Prabhu. So he's living in the Brahmacharya. So he's 72, I think. 72 years old. He's born in 1946. So he's born, you know, like 72 years old. And you see how strong he is, that generation. Then you see the generation and the next generation, and they're becoming like weaker and weaker. Why is that? Because that's the influence of the age of Kali. Everything has become, the atmosphere is becoming contaminated, and therefore people are losing their vitality. So not as powerful. So he saw that as soon as he came out, he saw that everything is losing its vitality. There was another film that I saw a few years ago. And these people were living in the forest, and then they came out, and then they came to like the shopping centers, like in the west way of the shopping centers, Chadston or Southland or something like that. And then they were living in the forest, so they were very strong. They were hunting and they were gathering their food and living naturally. And when the first thing they recognized when they came to the shopping centers, because the kids had not seen like Western civilization before they came in, the first thing they said, so many people are fat. They've never seen fat people. Because they're all working and using their bodies and like that. But then as soon as you come into this civilization, so Prabhupada says, well, the Bhagavatam says, actually, in the very first chapter of the first canto, so the qualities of the age of Kali is that, and Prabhupada explains in the purport, he says that people are, there's too much sense gratification. And when there's too much sense gratification, it destroys the physical health, the mental health, all these different things. Just like you see in Australia, we have one millionaire, James Packer, so you may know him. He owns Crown Casino. Very rich. His father was very, very wealthy man. So now he's just been taken away. He has mental health issue. So he had to stop being the head of the company. There's too many problems, too much sense gratification and too much laziness and not eating the right foods and all these things. It causes a lack of energy.
Intoxication.
Yeah. So in the Bhagavatam, it says Muchukunda came in, he saw everything was, so he understood, okay, Kali Yuga is nearly here. This is the very end of Dwapara Yuga, Krishna's pastimes. And then when Kali Yuga starts, everything becomes very. So what did he do? He went to the north. Headed north towards the Himalaya. So what does that basically mean? It means, as the Bhagavatam teaches us, we have to become renounced. Right. As life goes by and we practice devotional service, you should feel your spirit of renunciation increasing as time goes by. You should become more detached and more renounced as time goes by. You should see that in yourself. Generally, people get married when they're young. In their 20s, these days maybe closer to 30, but you know, around that age, that's like more the ideal time to get married. So you get married at that time, and then you increase your material facilities and you expand everything, and you have kids and you buy properties and houses and your cars and you do all of your expansion. But then quickly you should get to a saturation point, and then you should decrease. Spiritual life is not meant for increasing material facility. And at the age of 50, you have to make a conscientious effort to become more detached and renounced. If it's not happening naturally, then you conscientiously have to push yourself to become more detached, more renounced. So this is the symbolism. He went to the Himalaya. So we don't go to the Himalaya. We may go to Mayapur or Vrindavan. Prabhupada mentions that. He said devotees should go to Mayapur or Vrindavan or Puri. But the point is, we should practice more spiritual life. When you get to the age of 50, you should become very serious about your Krishna consciousness. Any points?
It was good that he went to the north. Because then there was some quite hermitage there. If he had gone to some lonely place, like
King Bharat, then he would have got a rest to something, any animal or anybody. But that could have distracted him.
So it's good that he went there, but he admitted to it.
Yeah,
Bharat
Maharaj also went to the Himalaya. He was also
headed. But then he had no association with the devotees there.
The devotees were close by, but he was not associating with them. You should always associate with the devotees.
Yeah, that's
right. So you and your husband are setting an ideal example. Because you're getting older, but you keep associating with the devotees.
Yeah, I could be
blessed.
Yeah, I could be blessed.
You two do?
Yeah, we do.
Whatever goes on behind closed doors, that's your business. But you come out of your cave regularly on St. Kilda Road, and then you come and associate with the devotees. That's very good.
And the other thing is that Revati, when he got married with Balramji, she was so tall, he had to put her down a bit. She was so tall.
Previous yoga.
Yeah.
Any other point?
What is the height of the people in Balarama? 18?
Krishna is about 7 foot tall. No, Satya Yuga, 18 foot tall.
Satya Yuga, 18 foot
tall. Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard 18 foot tall.
So, Dwapara Yuga?
End of Dwapara Yuga, the men are about 7 foot tall. And they decrease in size. Now the average is, 6 foot tall. Any other point?
At the end of Kali Yuga, they were 2 feet tall.
Yeah, it says that. 2 or 3 feet tall.
At the age of 10, we consider the lower man.
Yeah. Hare Krishna. Kali Yuga ki? Okay. The sober king, beyond material association and free of doubt, was convinced of the value of austerity. Absorbing his mind in Lord Krishna, he came to Ganta Madana Mountain. Brihadbhanu, you like to read that one?
The name Ganta Madana indicates a place of delightful fragrances. Undoubtedly, Gandhamadana was filled with the aroma of wild flowers and forest honey, and with other natural scents.
Mm. Any points?
I think that's where King Indra goes, isn't it? That's where King Indra goes, the Apsaras, to enjoy.
Could be. So it's in the Himalayas, so. Any other point? So obviously it's a very natural place and it's a very beautiful place. Ideal for practicing spiritual life. It's like these days, you go to Vrindavan, it's become very contaminated, very polluted. The air quality is very poor. Pollution is very bad. And it's contaminated now. Prabhupada actually said that New Vrindavan, our farm over there in America, or New Nandagram, our farm here, or New Govardhan, like that, Prabhupada said they're actually better than Vrindavan Dham in Kali Yuga because it's peaceful. That's the way the Dham should be. Now you go to Vrindavan, it's not peaceful. Right? There's noise pollution, there's air pollution. Right? So much difficulty to focus. It is becoming challenging now for devotees to focus. We still like to go there because it's spiritually powerful, but it is becoming more challenging. So these natural places are desirable and they're wanted. And these are the best places to practice your spiritual life, if you can find it. Albert Park's very peaceful, comparatively. For a suburb, it's quite a peaceful suburb in many ways. Any points?
Too many high-rise units are coming up in the morning.
Yeah, and traffic's terrible now. It's a big mess. Yeah. Anything else? Okay. There he arrived at Badrikashram, the abode of Lord Narayan. The abode of Lord Naranarayan, where, remaining tolerant of all dualities, he peacefully worshipped the Supreme Lord Hari by performing severe austerities. The Lord returned to Mathura, which was still surrounded by Yavanas. Then he destroyed the army of barbarians and began taking their valuables to Dwaraka. Chandan.
Please hear from this verse that Kalayana alone pursued Lord Krishna into the mountain cave. When Krishna returned to the busy city of Mathura, he generated the vast Bajrayan army.
Any points?
Machukunda, just thinking about it, if you were lucky enough to see Krishna, why wouldn't you follow Krishna? Why would you go and Krishna's there on earth?
Krishna mentions at the end of the last chapter, because he's 18 foot tall and it's not really compatible with Krishna's pastimes. So Krishna said to him, why don't you go off to do some austerity and do like that?
I think I recall. It also says that he has to be born again a Brahmin, take birth as a Brahmana.
Krishna gives him that benediction. He said, you'll take birth again and then we'll associate them.
And surely we'll associate.
Yeah.
Yes. So he's doing austerities now, does he still have to take birth as a Brahmin?
Yeah. Doesn't have to, but Krishna desires that. Any other point?
I think he wanted to get rid of the sins. Killing all the other people when he was in the
area. Yeah, that's part of the reason. Anything else?
Isn't it that before you go back to the spiritual world, you have to take one birth there of Krishna back there?
Yeah, it's said like that. The universe where Krishna is appearing. So.
Sometimes you don't.
Yeah, generally you do. So it says that Krishna, he's one of the reasons which he appears for, and especially that is prevalent in this section of the 10th canto. He comes to destroy the burden of the earth. So you'll see most of his pastime from now on. In this next section of the 10th canto, he's destroying the demoniac hordes, killing the demons. So he travels in different places and he destroys the demons, and then he goes to Dwaraka, and then they attack Dwaraka. No, it's either he'll come out and kill them, or they'll attack Dwarka and he'll destroy them. So he goes back to Mathura, because that's where he's already moved the Yadu dynasty across to Dwarka. But he goes back to Mathura because he's close by. And then he sees that the city is surrounded by the Yavanas, Kala Yavanas soldiers. And then he destroys all of them. So that's his pastime at this point. It's mainly Vinashaya. To destroy the demoniac person. Yeah, just to show his power. And in Kali Yuga, it is described, you cannot kill the demoniac people, otherwise they'll put you in jail. We can't kill people, otherwise we'll go to jail for killing people. But in Kali Yuga, Lord Chaitanya, he kills the demoniac spirit by the process of Harinam Sankirtan. It says in Chaitanya Mangala, Harinam Sankirtan is like a chopper, or like an axe or a sword. So we're killing the demoniac spirit by giving the people the holy name. And by taking the holy name, it destroys our demoniac consciousness. A consciousness to enjoy separately from God. So here it is being mentioned that Krishna is especially destroying the demons in this pastime. Any points? Okay. As the wealth was being carried by oxen and men under Lord Krishna's direction, Jarasandha appeared at the head of 23 armies. So he's come back. How many times has he been so far?
17.
And this is number?
18.
So this is how long Krishna stays in Mathura, 18 years, because he comes every year. Now Krishna, after this, is going to go and live in Dwaraka. So Jarasandha is coming back the 18th time. So, what do we learn from Jarasandha?
Persistence,
yeah. Determination, never give up in your spiritual life, no matter how difficult it gets. Sometimes spiritual life is difficult. Sometimes we face challenges. Sometimes we might even feel like giving up. But we should learn from Jarasandha, meditate on Jarasandha. Jarasandha did not give up. We should also take that good lesson from.
You are doing wrong, kingdom. You are not spiritually advancing.
No, he was not spiritually advanced. O king, seeing the fierce waves of the enemy's army, the two Madhavas, imitating human behavior, ran swiftly away. So why did Krishna and Balaram run away?
Because everything was not there. I mean, everybody was in
the... Yeah, because they're performing Leela. Kshatriya Dharma is that if someone faces you, you must face the enemy. You can't turn your back on the enemy. Otherwise, you're considered to be a coward. And you'll lose your reputation. That's why it says in Gita, happy are Kshatriyas for which fighting opportunities come unsought, opening for them the gateway to the heavenly kingdom. So, a Kshatriya should never turn his back on the enemy. Better to die. Even we hear stories of the Rajputs, the Kshatriyas from the past. Sometimes they would fight and they were not winning, so they would retreat and they would go back. And then they go back to their palace and they came back and their wife would be up there on the turret, on the gatehouse above the gate, and the king would say, open the gate. He said, did you win the battle? He said, no, I did not win the battle, I'm retreating. And then the queen would say, then go back, either go and win or die, but don't come back here. That's actually a Kshatriya. So that should be our consciousness. We fight till the end for Krishna. So, why did he run away then? Why did Krishna and Balaram turn?
That's his leader.
It's pastime. Because if you turn your back on someone, you run and they're chasing you. Then, like when you're a children, you know, they play hide and seek or tiggy. What do you call it these days?
Tiggy,
like that. So that's what it is. It's fun. Like one kid runs and the other kids try to touch them. So Krishna and Balaram are playing like that. They turn and they go to run. And then Jarasandha chases them. So they're just having fun. They're just enjoying themselves. When they want to, they'll turn and then they will destroy the armies. So it's just pleasure. That's what it's lila. Everything Krishna does is lila. There's no fear. Krishna doesn't think I have to run away or I'm scared of Jarasandha. It's like hide and seek. Just enjoying his lila. He's come back 17 times, now it's 18th time. So maybe I'll do something different this time.
Change it up.
Yeah.
Is that why he's called Ranchor?
Yeah. Ranchor, because he ran away from it.
But is this because of that Yavnaki?
He also... Both is it?
Ranchor.
Yeah, Ranchor. Rancho means he ran away.
Okay.
Therefore, we call him
Rancho.
Rancho.
But I was just wondering, which of the two?
As you like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Were they also leading the armies away from their devotees?
Yeah, you could think of it like that. Abandoning the abundant riches, fearless but feigning fear, they went, many yojanas, on their lotus-like feet. When he saw them fleeing, powerful Jarasandha laughed loudly and then pursued them with charioteers and foot soldiers. He could not understand the exalted position of the two lords. So why could he not understand the position of Krishna and Balaram? Yeah, because he doesn't have devotion.
He has envy and no prayer.
Yeah, because there's no devotion. If you don't have devotion, you can't see. Just like, you know, in the past, I used to give lectures in the temple room and school children would come from high schools. So we'd get 150 kids from Essendon Grammar or someone like that. So they would come. And then they're sitting there. And then Prabhupada's there and the deities are there. And then they say, look at the deities. And you'd explain to them why this is a deity. It is not a statue. What is the difference? So explain to them. But then some of the kids, they couldn't accept it. They can't see it because they don't have the vision. So they look, but they can't see. So even when you see the deity, unless you have bhakti, you can't see the deity's actual constitutional position. One time I was lecturing to those kids, and then one of them, Prabhupada, was sitting there. And then one kid, he put their hand up, been there for half an hour. And they asked a question. And I said, what is your question? They said, how come that man has not blinked for half an hour?
You say that in Bombay also. When people say, when Swami, you're going to speak.
Yeah.
They're sitting there for 2 hours.
Yeah. I say, actually, he is a statue. The Murti. But that Murti in Melbourne Temple is so lifelike. The Murtis they make now, the newer Murtis, very few are like that. They don't really make them like that anymore. Don't have that same. The one up here, up in Prabhupada's room, and this one. The one in Vrindavan, at least in Prabhupada's room, Vrindavan. I can't think on the in the temple itself, but at least the one in the Prabhupada's house in Vrindavan. Very lifelike. These were the original murtis. They're very powerful. So if someone doesn't have the vision, they can't see the deity. So Jarasandha, he can't see Krishna. He doesn't see who he actually is. So he chases him. He thinks, I can kill him, I can defeat him. How can we kill Krishna? How can you defeat Krishna? It's not possible. Any point?
I still remember the first time when I went to the Godam temple. And then I saw Srila Prabhupada sitting there. And I said, people said that he is no more in this world, but he's here. He looks so real to me.
We should be seeing the deity through the Shastra Chakshu.
Yeah. Spiritual vision. When do we read number 9 or?
Yeah, yeah.
We did. Okay. Apparently exhausted, after fleeing a long distance, the two lords climbed a high mountain named Pravarshana, upon which Lord Indra showers incessant rain. Although he knew they were hiding on the mountainside, Jarasandha could find no trace of them. Therefore, O King, he placed firewood on all sides and set the mountain ablaze. So, Mahatma Prabhu.
Clearly, we are observing one of the Supreme Lord's transcendental pastimes. Although the Bhagavatam states that the two lords, Krishna and Balaram, were exhausted, even in their so-called exhausted state, they were able to quickly climb a high mountain and shortly thereafter jump off it to the ground. It would be unwise and illogical to ignore the whole picture the sages are giving us here and instead try to pick up apart and isolated descriptions. Clearly, we are watching the Supreme Personality in the midst of his spiritual pastimes. We are not observing an ordinary human being. Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram were still quite young men when this pastime took place. And one can easily see in these descriptions how they must have been enjoying themselves. Eagerly fleeing from the somewhat ridiculous King Jarasandha, racing up a mountain, jumping off and totally befuddling the constantly failing demon, who somehow or the other never lost confidence in himself. Seeing without envy or quarrelsomeness, Lord pastime immensely and
So, any points there?
So is his potency.
What does it mean?
It means how potent he is, even after walking and playing for such a long time. He still climbed the mountain and jumped into the water. Save
himself,
and
he
just says
he shows
his immense power.
Anything else?
Now the demon has lost confidence. This is the moment. So far he was very confident.
No, he thinks he's killed Krishna, so he's very confident.
His purpose is?
He did not lose confidence in himself. Any other point?
Ruchi, I want to know, did he capture Krishna's army? What happened to Krishna's army?
Everyone's in Dwarka now.
So, what about Krishna and Balaram brought all the soldiers, crowns and things?
Yeah, everyone woke up in Dwarka, the whole army, everything.
Nobody was there.
It says when they came out to fight Jarasandha the first time, there was a small group who accompany Krishna. There might be a few devotees around, but most of them have gone. Any other point?
So the next meeting of Krishna and Jarasandha is at the time when they kill the innocent cancer?
Could be. He thinks that Krishna's dead.
He put Jarasandha in the illusion.
Yeah.
And then so that he's terrified, running away from me, even if they are scared.
Yeah.
And so he just followed them.
Mm.
But ultimately, actually he was himself before.
Mm.
But,
yeah. Anything else?
I think it's also showing that when you defy God, you're ridiculous. Like you're humiliated. You're funny.
Yeah.
In this painting battle, Jarasandha and all his soldiers were spared. In 17 battles before, only Jarasandha was spared.
Yeah. He allowed it to. So basically, this is the problem with the non-devotees. The non-devotees cannot see Krishna, and they don't understand Krishna's potency. For a devotee, he would never consider that Krishna has lost his life, even in the most difficult circumstance. But the non-devotee, he thinks he can kill Krishna. So Jarasandha thinks he's one now and he's going away. I've destroyed them both. Krishna can never be destroyed, and even the pure devotee can only be destroyed with Krishna's sanction. And you see in the Mahabharata, just like in the House of Lakh, the Pandavas went into the house which was built by Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra. They arranged this house to be built. As soon as they walked in there, Yudhishthira noticed the whole house was flammable. It was built just to go up in flames. And Vidura also warned them. He said, they're going to try to assassinate you. So anyone who is intelligent understands you cannot kill. That's why Prabhupada said that Jesus did not die on the cross. Because you can't kill the pure devotee unless the Lord sanctions. So it is. And Bhishma Dev, he chose when he was going to leave this world. And the Pandavas, they tried to assassinate them so many times, but they could not. So therefore, this shows that only if Krishna sanctions, it can be done. And Krishna himself cannot be killed. So a non-devotee will think like that. But a devotee always thinks Krishna is infallible. Unless you're a pure devotee, and then you're absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, the pure devotees think Krishna may die. When Krishna is dancing on the Kaliyasuts, all the Brijbasis thought that Krishna will now die. Now, but that's because of their prema. Then it goes beyond, it goes to another level of consciousness. Any points?
Is it that his army, there were no demons in him? That's why.
Who is army?
No, the Jarasandha, you know, when he came in.
They were all demons.
It didn't die when they came.
Demons.
So why didn't Lord Krishna kill
him? You ask him.
Ask him.
When you see him, you ask him.
Okay. Whom will I ask?
Ask Krishna and say, what happened? Yeah? 18th time you did not kill, what happened? Hare Krishna. Okay. The two of them suddenly jumped from the burning mountain, which was 11 yojanas high, and fell to the ground.
90 miles.
90 miles. So, Dhruv, can you please read the purport?
11 yojanas is approximately 90 miles.
Any points?
Only Lord can do this. Only Lord can do
this. Who can jump off a mountain that is 90 miles high? What is the biggest mountain on this planet?
Mount Everest.
Mount Everest. How tall is it?
8,000
feet.
8,000
feet? 29,000. From sea level?
A meter, sorry.
Yeah, 8,000. Yeah, from sea level, 29,000 feet. The tallest mountain on the earth is actually under the ocean. There's mountains under the ocean which are bigger than Mount Everest. even higher. But because they're under the ocean, we don't see them. There's bigger mountains like that. But the biggest on this planet is like that. But that's not very big compared to what's being spoken of here. So it says that all back 5,000 years ago, the mountains were bigger, the trees were bigger, everything was bigger. But now things are reducing because of the age of Kali. So only Krishna can jump off a mountain. We can't jump off.
Where is this Pramashiva mountain?
I'm not sure where it is. Must be. It says Krishna traveled many yojanas to get there. So it doesn't say which direction or where it is. Or, so. Not sure. Any other point?
Did he fall on the ground? I thought he's in the water,
they
were jumped into the water.
Doesn't mention.
I saw it.
Photo might be there, but it's not. Doesn't say anything about it. Unseen by their opponent or his followers or king, these two most exalted Yadus returned to their city of Dwarika, which had the ocean as a protective moat. So now they've gone back to the city of Dwarika, which was floating on the ocean. How big was the city? So it describes it was 96 square miles. It was very big, large, very, very large area. Yeah, it must be like Melbourne, like, you know, a large portion of Melbourne and the suburbs. That was Dwarka. It was floating out there on the ocean. So you could not attack it. That was the idea. That's why Krishna put it there. Jarasandha, moreover, mistakenly thought that Balaram and Keshava had burned to death in the fire. Thus he withdrew his vast military force and returned to the Magadha kingdom. As ordered by Lord Brahma, Revata, the opulent ruler of Anartha, gave Lord Balaram his daughter, Revati, in marriage. This has already been discussed. Charitarata, you like to read that?
The topic of Lord Krishna's marriage to Rukmini will not be discussed. By way of introduction, a brief mention is made of his brother Baldeva's marriage. This marriage was alluded to in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, third chapter, text 33 to 36.
Any points?
Isn't the Vedic culture that the older brother marries first?
Yeah.
So is that why it's mentioned?
Anything else? So this is preparing for the discussion of Krishna marrying his first queen. Who was the first queen? Rukmini. Yeah. She was the head of all. This will be described in the next chapter or two. We'll hear more about Rukmini and her pastimes. So Lord Balaram had two wives. Their names were? Revati and Varuni. O hero among the Kurus, the Supreme Lord himself, Govinda, married Bhishmaka's daughter, Vaidabi, who was a direct expansion of the goddess of fortune. The Lord did this by her desire, and in the process he beat down Shalva and other kings who took Shishupal's side. Indeed, as everyone watched, Sri Krishna took Rukmini, just as Garuda boldly stole nectar from the demigods. Sri Chaitanya Prabhu.
Sri Jiva Goswami gives the following profound comments on these two verses. The words Sri Nakram indicate that beautiful Rukmini is a direct expansion of the eternal goddess of fortune. Therefore, she is worthy to be the pride of the personality of Godhead. As stated in the Brahma Samhita 5.67, Shriya Kanta, Kanta, Parama, Purusha. In the spiritual world, all the female lovers are goddesses of fortune, and the male lover is the Supreme Personality. As Sutta Jiva Goswami explained Srimati Rukmini Devi in the primary portion of Srimati Radharani, the Kartik Mahatmya section of the Padma Puran states, Kaishava Gopal Khan means the Yogone Raja Kanyaka, in childhood, Sri Krishna endured with the daughters of covered men, and in his adolescence he enjoyed with the daughters of kings. Similarly, in the Skanda Puran, we find the statement, Rukmini Vara Bhaktyam to Radha with Vinda Vane Vane. Rukmini is in Dwarka, what Radha is in the forest of Vrindavan. The term Swayam Vare here means by one's own choice. Although the word often refers to the form of Vedic ceremony in which the aristocratic girl may select her own husband, here it indicates the informal and indeed unprecedented events surrounding Krishna's marriage to Rukmini. In fact, Sri Krishna and Srimati Rukmini chose each other because of their eternal transcendental love.
Any points?
The valuable love to Krishna is the one given freely.
Yeah.
Of your own choice. It's not forced.
Yeah. Anything else?
We see Krishna fulfills the desire of all the from all these pastimes, basically, like from Puja, the rishis, home of Krishna, the marriage, so all those girls wanted Krishna to be the husband. Krishna fulfilled that desire.
Anything else? So Krishna married Rukmini because Rukmini is? She is part of his internal pleasure potency. She is not material. Rupa Goswami says in Radha Krishna Ganodesh Dipika, he says there are 800,000 gopis who are eternally perfect. So that's Krishna's internal potency. We are tatashta shakti. Tatashta means marginal potency. We can choose to be either in Maya or in Yoga Maya. And you can be in the spiritual energy or the material energy. You can't be in both. And of course, in the material world, we could be a mixture. But you can either be in the spiritual world or the material world. You cannot be in both. Unless you're a pure devotee. So, we see that Rukmini is an expansion of... Actually, she's an expansion of Chandravala. Sachabama is an expansion of Radhika directly, and Chandravali expands as Rukmini. You see, Rukmini's mood is very similar to Chandravali's. Chandravali's mood is submission. Rukmini's mood is also like that. You'll see when Sudama Vipra comes, the later pastime, you'll see her mood is very similar. And then Sachabama, her mood is just like Srimati Radharani. So it is Bama. Bama means contrary, means unsubmissive. That's the nature of the love between Radha and Krishna. So we can say that all the gopis are expansions of Radharani, that's true. You can say all the queens are expansions of Radharani, that is true. But specifically, it says who is who. So there are eight principal gopis. What are the name of the eight principal gopis? If you go to Mayapur and you see Radharani has a group. Good. You got them all. Very good. Yeah. So if you look to the right, when we're looking at the deities, Radha Madhava, Sudevi, Ranga Devi, Indulika, Vishaka, then Radharani, then Madhava, then Lalita, Champakalata, Chitra, and Tungavija. Very good. That's the order. So each of those eight principal gopis, they become Krishna's eight principal wives, which we'll hear about in the next few chapters, how he wins each wife. So Radharani becomes Satyabhama. Then Lalita becomes Jambavati. And then Vishakha becomes Kalindi. So then you'll see that each one expands into the particular. So we'll see as the pastime unfolds then. Any point?
Why is it Radharani the principal wife? The first wife? Satyabhama.
The mood is different, that's all. The mood is different. The point is that Krishna only associates with these pleasure potency. Krishna never comes in contact with anything material. He never contacts this material energy, because it's inferior, it's apara prakriti. He only associates with the devi prakriti, the spiritual energy, the para prakriti. So he never directly comes in contact. So therefore, when we see Krishna in his pastimes, he only associates with his eternal associates, such as Rukmini and Satyabhama. They are his eternal queens. Any point?
Okay.
Yeah, ultimately. We say it like that, ultimately. They all exist eternally, but philosophically we say Radharani is the source. King Parikshit said the Supreme Lord married Rukmini, the beautiful faced daughter of Bhishmaka, in the Rakshasa style, or so I have heard. Alia, you want to read that?
Srila Sridhara Swami quotes the following Smriti statement: Rakshasa Yuga Haranat. A Rakshasa marriage takes place when the bride is stolen from one's rival suitors by force. Similarly, Shukadev Goswami himself has already said, Rajna Pramatya. Krishna had to beat down opposing kings to take Rukmini.
Mm. Any points?
I thought it is a
they can
steal the
body of
the woman, right?
They can what?
They can steal.
That's what Krishna just did.
So, why is it called
Rakshasa? It's Rakshasa. That's what Rakshasas do. There's eight types of marriage. Right? Gandhava marriage, Rakshasa marriage. There's all different types of marriage in the Vedic system.
So Arjun did the same thing? When he
stole Subhadra. Oh yeah, Subhadra, yeah. I was thinking of Draupadi. Yeah, Subhadra, he did like that.
So that's also like this, isn't
it? Yeah, just stole it without permission. So generally, the princesses, because they're very qualified. Usually, in the Vedic culture, what is the system to get the daughter married?
Swayamvara.
Swayamvara. You had a swayamvara?
The guru and devi said.
No, I said in the Vedic system.
Arranged marriages.
Yeah, arranged marriages, right? Your mother comes to you and your father comes to you and they say, we've found someone for you to marry. That's the system. Yeah. So they come. The parents come and they say, my daughter, we've found someone for you to marry. And then out of submission, then she accepts. But in the very high class Kshatriya families, they can have a Swayambhara. When the girl is exceptionally qualified, then they can have a Swayambhara. Swayam. Swayam means your own.
Self.
Self, yeah. It means you choose. So she has to be very qualified. Right? But the father gives her a choice, that shows how qualified she is. Right? So they arrange. So sometimes they arrange competition. You see, with Draupadi, there is competition. So, and then she can choose after the competition takes place, then she can say, I want to marry that one. Or whatever it is, however it works. Just like in the Draupadi Swayambhara, right? What did they have to do to win Draupadi? Shoot the fish in the eye. Was it a real fish? No. You had to shoot the fish, and where was the fish? No, it was on the roof. Roof was very high, not like this, but much higher. And underneath the fish, there was a wheel, a chariot wheel, and the wheel was spinning. So you had to shoot the fish through the wheel as it was spinning, through, and you had to hit it in the eye. But to shoot, you couldn't look up, you had to look down at a pot of water, and at the reflection, you had to aim and fire up. And the water was shimmering. So uneven. So you had to look there. And before you could even do that, you had to string the bow. Right? And most of the warriors could not even string the bow because the bow was so strong. They pulled it and pulled it and pulled it to put the string on. Just before the string come up, the bow would like that. Many of the warriors. So actually, there's only about 5 warriors who actually could even string the bow. Jarasandha was one of them. Shishupal was one of them. They came, they strung the bow, they looked down, shot, but they did not hit the eye. They missed the eye. So then Karna, he came. Karna just grabbed the bow, right, very quickly, strung it, looked down, and then he aimed, and Draupadi said, even if you hit the eye, I will not marry you. She said that to him. And that made him so angry that when he fired, he just missed the eye. Yeah. But then Arjuna came, he dressed as a brahmana. Yeah. And everyone was very surprised. A brahmana is going to try. So he offered his obeisances to the bow, picked up the bow, strung it, circumambulated the bow, and then he just looked at him like that. And then hit in the eye, right? And then Draupadi, when she saw him, how powerful he was, she just put the garland on him. He walked out, she followed him, and the Kshatriyas went. They were very upset. So they all followed Arjuna. So he can't take the princess. So they went out, and there was a fight. That's the whole story. So that's Swayambhara. Swayambhara means she chooses. Krishna and Balaram were also there. They were also there. And Yudhishthira and the Pandavas, they were dressed as brahmanas, and they could not be recognized. Even Duryodhana was there, but he could not recognize them. And when Krishna, he looked over it and he saw Yudhishthira, he said to Balaram, he said, there's Yudhishthira. Just by seeing him, he said, this is Yudhishthira, you could tell. So then there was a whole pastime. So here, there was supposed to be a Swayambhara. Right? Rukmini was going to choose her husband. And what did Krishna do? Shishupal, yeah, they wanted Shishupal to marry. Yeah. But she had some choice. And then what did Krishna do? He didn't even wait for the Swayambhara. Yeah, she was coming back from the temple, right? And they were all the warriors were there watching her. And then Krishna just pulls up on the chariot, grabs her by the hand, puts her on the chariot, and drives off. Rakshasa marriage. No? Doesn't even wait. Doesn't even ask the father. Doesn't do anything. Just comes, takes the girl, and just goes. You have to be very powerful. If you do that, you have to be extremely powerful.
There was no time that actually the Brahmana went very late. and they had to rush to the temple.
Yeah, so you have to be very powerful to do that, especially in the Vedic times. You know, with all the warriors present, you know, and to not even be concerned about the other warriors. That's how powerful Krishna is.
Actually, he didn't even inform him, Balaramji knew afterwards, and then he followed him.
I think Balaramji helped him, because there was a bit of trouble.
He thought that there would be trouble, so he went
to help him.
My
Lord, I wish to hear how the immeasurably powerful Lord Krishna took away his bride while defeating such kings as Magadha and Shalva. What experienced listener or brahmana could ever grow satiated while listening to the pious, charming and ever fresh topics of Lord Krishna, which cleanse away the world's contamination? Sri Badarayani said, there was a king named Bhishmaka, the powerful ruler of Vidarbha. He had 5 sons and 1 daughter of lovely countenance. Rukmi was the firstborn son, followed by Rukmarata, Rukmabahu, Rukmakesha, and Rukmamali. Their sister was the exalted Rukmini. Srila Prabhupada ki.